Hey, it's really good to be back. I really liked being with you all last time, and I was thinking about the last time as I was coming up here and realized that I pretty much like lip-synced the movie for you last time I was here. And so this is the first time I've ever done that everywhere, anywhere. So, but there's no movie today.
Oh.
Yeah. That's right. No movie today, no technology at all. You just get me. But I think that'll be okay, and hopefully we'll be able to have a great conversation about a difficult subject. I realized this is right before I was about to come up here, that I actually lied a couple of times since I've been here already. Because people ask me, how's the summer been going? And I said, oh, it's been good. My sermon's on pain. My summer has not been good. It's been bad. In fact, the last end of the school year and into the summer has been really, really hard. But God has taught me some amazing things that I want to share with you all. So let me say a word of prayer for you. Jesus, you are amazing. And I just want to thank you for being the constant presence in my life and in the lives of many of my friends who are here. Father, you are with us all the time. Sometimes we're aware of it, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're looking for it, sometimes we close our eyes. But that doesn't change you. You're always there. You're always fighting for us, you're always present. You always love us. I want to ask right now, dear Lord, that as this man speaks, you would get him out of the way so that you can be heard. I pray that you would use stories and my voice and my presence to be able to communicate something that is beyond us, something larger than us, something that would prepare the people here to move into maybe some painful places of their lives, to be able to find life on the other side. I want to thank you. In the name of Jesus. So I was telling you that I have had a difficult season. A couple of things occurred that were just not pleasant, and some things that I'm still walking forward through. One thing that I find, and I don't know how many of you relate to these experiences, but that sometimes when bad things happen in our lives, it seems to be in multiples. You know, like, there's not just a bad thing that happens and then everything else is great. It seems that if something bad is going to occur, then lots of bad things occur. It's not just one person who dies that you see on the news. All of a sudden, there's this myriad of people who pass away that are on the news. And I've had one of those years. I'm going to talk about one of the experiences that I've had that's been difficult for me to go through and some of the things that I've learned in the process. When I was about 8 years old, something like that, I lost my father. I lost my father to cancer. And as a result of losing my father, and that main income and all the things that go with it, we moved in with my grandmother and grandfather. They had a house with plenty of room, and there we were. So I was this 8-year-old boy who was moving into this space. And so my grandfather was the one who ultimately became my father. This was the man who raised me. He was a great man. His name was Harry Kieran. Actually, his name was William Harry Kieran. There's a longer story that goes with that I won't even say. But his name was Harry Kieran. Most people called him Bill, which was odd to me because, you know, he was, well, whatever. But he was my grandpa. He was my grandpa, and so I only call him grandpa, which lessens the confusion. But he was a great man. He was the man who taught me how to fish, who taught me how to do stuff. I know some of you went on the work camp this last week. I learned everything about doing that kind of stuff from my grandpa, building rooms and learning how to use tools and painting and all the stuff that kind of goes into that. I learned how to be a man by watching him, how he treated people and how he moved around. And I was thinking recently that even the kind of t-shirts he wore, he used to wear these V V-neck white tees, you know, and I wear them all the time. Like, that's always what I wear. And I look back and go, I wore it because of him. Now they're trendy. Like, you know, I see the Jonas Brothers wearing them and stuff, and I'm like, I've been wearing these for a long time. You know, so, you know, I recognize, like, but it was because of him that I wore these things, not because of Nick Jonas. So I'm like, okay, this is everything that I am, I learned from watching this guy, and I loved him. He was absolutely amazing. One of the things that I always found the most interesting is when it was summer, like this, because when it was summer and he'd be wearing his white tees around, there would be, on his arm, I could see these little, you know, like these little feet, like coming out from underneath his shirt sleeve, because he had a tattoo. And as a little kid, wow, that's really cool. And then, you know, he would occasionally wear those, you know, if it was really, really hot, he'd wear what we call now wife beaters, but it was muscle shirts back then. So he'd be wearing these kind of white ribbed muscle shirts around, and he was this kind of this big strapping tough guy. And so he'd be walking around the house with this, you know, this tough guy shirt on and a tattoo, and I'm like, that is just the toughest guy I've ever seen in my whole life. And it was my grandpa. You know, but he was very gentle, and it was kind, and would play with us all the time, and so I just had this image in my mind of this great man who loved me like nobody has ever loved me, taught me how to be a man, and walked around with a cool tattoo of a bluebird. It was a bluebird. And there was a reason why he had a bluebird tattoo, because he was in the Navy in World War II. And when you're in the Navy, most of the time that he spent in the Navy was in Dallas, Texas. Because he had signed up to, you know, be part of the war effort. And they stationed him in Dallas, Texas, just kind of being a mechanic. So he was there most of the time, never really saw any action because he was just in Dallas. Maybe a fight or two or something, I don't know. But, you know, there was really no serious war things happening while he was there until the end of the war. And if you're a sailor and you travel 1,000 nautical miles, you earn yourself a bluebird tattoo. Like, so that's what the tradition was. So the end of World War II, he was assigned to a ship to go and be part of the cleanup effort in Okinawa. So he boarded the ship, and he was there, and his job was rebuilding this place after just the devastation of all of the battles that were happening there. And so he did this, and of course that ended up with him with 1,000 nautical miles as he traveled around, and he and some of his friends were like, you know, Bill, this is your time. Like, go, let's go get your tattoo. I can't imagine what that tattoo experience would have been like. I don't know if it was in the hold of a ship. I don't know if it was some back alley on some island somewhere. I can't imagine it was hygienic or pleasant or anything like that. But he ended up with this tattoo that, of course, by the time he was old, was more of a blue blob than a blue bird. But still, it was there, and I thought it was really cool. A couple weeks ago, I lost him. He passed away. And as he was dying, he was dying from Alzheimer's, which is just a nightmare. He didn't know who I was at the times that I visited him, last couple times I visited him. But I knew who he was. I remembered him. I remembered what he had done for me, how he had loved me, how he had raised me, how he had been my father when I had no father. He was there. And last time that I went and visited him, I was telling Lily that I took my son on a camping trip. It was actually a cross-country camping trip. We would drive, and I have a pickup truck. It's parked outside, and we would actually sleep in the back of the pickup truck, and little truck stops all along the way, and it was really, really cool. And in fact, she had asked me, the reason why I told her that story, she asked me why I had growth here. That is why I have growth here, because me and my 10-year-old son made a pact not to shave. And mine you could see, his you really couldn't. So we kind of did it, until I kind of kept it, and we'll see what happens from here. We went on this cross-country trip, and that was my opportunity to say goodbye to him. We went all the way to my hometown in St. Louis, and just sat with him and thanked him for everything that he had done for me and for how he had raised me. And it was painful, because I knew that was the last time I was ever going to see him. A couple weeks later, he did pass. which I was glad I was able to say goodbye. The week before he had gone, I knew he was dying. He was moved into hospice. And I was in New York City. A friend of mine was playing a show at a place in Lower Manhattan. And I went to see this show, and I was feeling a lot of this. Like, I know that I'm about to lose my grandfather, and what that was like, and I was thinking about all of the things that he had done. I'm about to tell a story that I recognize might be odd to some of you, but just walk with me. So walking through New York City and thinking about it, and after the show, I went to get some Chinese food, and just kind of sitting there thinking about it. I wasn't trying to relate. And I was sitting there thinking about, like, my grandfather and everything that he meant for me, and I started thinking about the tattoos. Some of you already know where this is going. So I was walking through Lower Manhattan and thinking about everything and thinking I wanted to give a tribute to my dad, my grandfather, who really was my dad, and decided that's what I was going to do. And so walking through, and I'm like, this is just crazy. What am I doing? And I actually passed this little place in Lower Manhattan. I thought, I'm just going to walk in, see what it's like, and kind of told the guy this story, and he said, I would love to do that. And so for a couple weeks, you know, we were kind of chatting about what it might look like, and then came the day. So throughout those couple of weeks, let me give a disclaimer. Lots of people have lots of different opinions about getting a tattoo. This is not me trying to sell a tattoo. I'm just telling you about my story. I'll just leave that at this. Because God taught me some things in it, and those are the things I want to share with you. So I go through this process, and a couple weeks go by, and I'm asking people about, like, what it's like. And my main question about getting a tattoo would be what? Does it hurt? Yes. Because as you can look at me, I'm not a tough guy. So, you know, I'm asking that question about does it hurt? And people are giving me different answers about the pain. And some people are all the way like, oh, no, it doesn't hurt at all. Like, no problem. I think they're trying to be tough. All the way to people going, oh, yes, I cried and passed out. I'm like, I don't know which one am I. And so the funniest one was at one point, some girl says, oh, yeah, it totally doesn't hurt. It's like a cat scratching a sunburn. Which I'm like those two phrases didn't go together for me, because that sounds like it hurts. So I'm like, okay, so I'm going to kind of cowboy up, and I'm going to make this happen, because I've decided now I really want to honor my grandfather. This meant a lot to me, because this would be a way I could always tell the story, because when people ask me, I can tell the story of this great man. And it would be a visual reminder for me of the things that he put into my life. So the day came, and I sat down, and I sat in the chair. And I'm feeling a little nervous, like, you know, because this might really hurt. Like, and what if it's going to hurt and I really wuss out and, you know, like, and I start crying and pass out like the other girl, or, you know, like, what do I do? Like, and so I go real prepared and wearing the same kind of shirt that he would have wore, you know, one of those muscle shirt kind of things. So I'm kind of sitting in the chair, and I hear the zzzz of the needle, and I'm like, you know, like, what's this going to be like? And I start trying to get real zen. You know, like, okay, you know, calm down, because I don't want to panic. And I'm looking at all the pictures, and I'm looking at all the things. And it starts in. The first cuts start in. And ladies and gentlemen, it hurts. Like, if there is any question, yes, it hurts. And it is a lot like a cat scratching his tongue. How odd. So anyway, as I'm going through this, I'm just kind of in it, and I know that I'm in this for the next hour. Now I'm in it for an hour of pain. And so I'm strapping in, and I'm kind of thinking about that, and I start talking to Jesus, because that's how I deal with pain. So I start talking to Jesus, and I'm like, God, you know, this is kind of interesting, and we're just kind of chatting along, and you know, sometimes I have kind of prayers where I'm praying for things, and other times I have a prayer that's just him and me. You know, we're just kind of talking and being present with one another. And it, you know, in this process, it, you know, he said, I got some things to tell you about this experience. And so I'm like, hey, I'm all ears, you know, because anything to distract me, you know, I'm ready to go. And he said, you know, there's a few things about this experience that I want to teach you, because I know you're in pain right now, not just here, but I know you're in pain here. And I brought you into this experience because I want to teach you about how to get through your own pain. The first thing he taught me about it as I was in this chair, he says, you know what? This is only going to last about an hour. And then it's going to be gone. That pain is going to be over. So this pain is temporary. I thought, okay, I can do that. Pain is temporary. Like, that's fine. It will not last forever. Sometimes when you're in pain, you think, this is never going to end. I'm going to be in pain like this for the rest of my life. He says, no, pain is not going to be forever. Even if it lasts the majority of my life, he says, there will come a day where I'm going to wipe every tear from my eyes. Pain is temporary. The second thing he taught me is that if I'm willing to endure this pain, that something beautiful is going to happen. You know, that something, that I'm going to be left with something that I'll be able to tell stories about, that I'll be able to look in the mirror, that I'll be able to tell my children about this man, William Harry Kieran, who loved me and what kind of a man he was, and what kind of a man I hope I am. And it'll be really cool and it'll be pretty and, you know, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, guys look at and go cool and girls look at and go, oh. You know, so it's both. It appeals to everyone. So I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, so if I'm willing to endure the pain, it'll end up in something beautiful. See, in our lives, we're so into stopping pain. You know, you walk into a drugstore, and the majority of things in the drugstore are designed to make me not feel unpleasant. We want to do everything we can to numb pain or to stop pain. And I thought about that, like, okay, this, if I'm willing to go to the end and something beautiful, what if I stop? What if I wuss out and then I end up with just a beak? You know, like, you know, I'm walking around and they're like, hey, what is that? And I'm like, well, it's a bluebird. You just have to imagine it. Like, you know, it just hurt really bad. So I stopped. And so, you know, if I don't let pain go all the way to its end, then it ends up with not what God intended. Like, it's because God wanted me to get all the way through the pain. Because if I get through the pain, then I'll end up with something beautiful. It's like the pain of studying, or the pain of training, or the pain of anything. Like, if I go through it, if I don't try and shortcut it, then what I'm going to end up with is something great. And the third thing I learned was that not only is this pain temporary, and not only if I'm willing to endure it, that I'm going to end up with something beautiful. The third thing is I could trust the one hurting me. As I was looking around, I was looking at the work that he had done on other people. You know, this wasn't a guy who just showed up that morning and said, you know, I was a firefighter, and today I'm like, I don't even want to do tattoos. You know, like, this was a guy who had spent his life really thinking about that, and the evidence, his handiwork was all around on people, on different people he had done and work he had done, and there were people who said, yeah, I like this guy, and you can trust this guy, and I watched him as he drew the sketch that was going to go on to me, and I'm like, he's good, he's good, like, he knows what he's doing, and not only that, he really seemed to care about my story. He was involved in my life, and I thought, you know, not only is this being temporary, and not only will I end up with something beautiful, I can trust the artist. I can trust the one hurting me, because he's good. I see his handiwork. I see the finished product that he's done in other people's lives. And so I can trust myself to him for the next hour. Well, as I thought through all of that, I thought, God, that's really good. Like, that sounds fantastic. That sounds like something really amazing. But a sermon comes from the Bible, not just from my experiences in a chair. I was in church the following Sunday, and the sermon was out of Mark chapter 4. And I thought, that's the one. That's the one. And that's what I want to share with you this morning. Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. We read it already as a reading, so I won't necessarily read the whole thing first. I'll just start walking through it with you. It says this, in verse 35, it says, as evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us cross to the other side of the lake." Let me tell you what this is. It wasn't just they were hanging out at the beach. You know, this wasn't beach day with Jesus and his friends. You know, they had been working all day long. Crowds were there. There was teaching. There was healing. There was effort. There was just a lot of people who needed a lot of things. And Jesus is looking at his disciples and recognizing it's the end of the day. We need a Sabbath. We need to rest. We need to get away from the crowds. And so he says to them, "Let's cross to the other side. It's time to get away." Jesus was human. Jesus got tired. Jesus suffered. Jesus hurt. And this was one of those situations where he wanted to pull them away. He was already in the boat, because I don't know if you remember, sometimes he would teach from the boat, because people would press in and the crowds would be so intense that he would go out into the boat and kind of float out there a little bit offshore so that he could still be heard, could still do some things, but he could create a little bit of a safety. So he would do that on a regular basis. So he was in the boat, so they started out leaving the crowds behind, although some other boats followed. I find that little parenthesis very interesting. Because see, sometimes when we're in a position where things are a little bit overwhelming, that people are demanding of us, that people are pressing in on us, that sometimes it feels like people just won't leave us alone, that people are just, seem like they're just sucking all the life from us, and we try and get away, don't you know that people always seem like they can find us? You know, and they're always kind of there, and you get that phone call or the text or the Facebook message or whatever, that it seems like people just keep following. It says, "But soon, a fierce storm arose. High waves began to break into the boat until it was nearly filled with water." Alright, so here's the situation. The situation is Jesus and his disciples have been working all day. There's a lot of people there that just are exhausting him and the disciples, and Jesus says, "It's time. It's time to go. We need to get away." Well, sea waters are calm, and people go, "I've got boats, so no problem. I'm just going to kind of trail on after these people." And then a storm comes. On the Sea of Galilee, storms are fierce and quick. It can be all calm and beautiful and lovely and nice, and then 1 second later, it is absolutely a nightmare. There are waves and craziness, and you can't see land, and it's just a nightmare. Fishermen know these storms. Fishermen are terrified of these storms. And these guys are in a boat in the middle of the storm. One thing I learned about storms from reading this passage is that sometimes God brings hard things into our lives, God brings pain into our lives, to move the people who don't really care about us away for just a minute. You've heard the phrase, "Now I know who my real friends are." I think that's what this experience is, knowing who those real friends are. This year has been hard, I told you. This has been a tough year for me. But as I look around, and maybe I didn't have the energy to give the way that people are used to me giving, that I didn't really have that kind of strength, I found that I have less and less people around me. But the people that did stand by me, those are the people I can identify, and so those are the people who really love me. Those are the people that are in the boat with me. Those are the people that are willing to go no matter if it's a storm or not. They're not turning around, they're not heading back. That's just a freedom. I'll keep on going. Sometimes storms come into our lives to show who really loves us. So, high waves began to break into the boat until it was nearly full of water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of a boat, in the back of the boat, with his head on a cushion. I think I love this verse so much because it didn't just say Jesus is sleeping in the back of the boat. It says Jesus is sleeping in the back of the boat, like, on a mission. Like he is, like he's sleeping on a cushion. Like, this is Jesus goes, like, "I didn't just nod off." You know, as I was sitting there, I'm like, you know, like you're in school and, you know, there's drool coming. You know, like, you know, has that ever happened to you? Like, that used to happen to me. I'd have my head down and then I'd, like, wake up and there's, like, this little drool puddle. So this isn't one of those kind of situations. Jesus is like, "Woo!" Like, you know, "I am going to bed." Like, laid out a cushion, curled up, like, "I am done. I am out." So this is serious. So Jesus is sleeping in the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. Frantically, Which, don't you think that's funny? Like, you know, can you imagine, like, you are in this storm and waves are crashing in, and I would imagine that means Jesus is getting wet too. Like, you know, things are crashing and Jesus is like just gone. And I was just like, looking at this like, what? Like, seriously? Like, what is this about? That's exactly what they were feeling. So frantically, they wake him up shouting, "Teacher, don't you even care?" Wow. "Don't you even care that we are going to drown?" See, like many of us, when Jesus calls us, we think that now it's our responsibility to get to the place that he called us. Jesus began this whole thing saying, "Let's cross to the other side." Jesus said, "This is where we're going. We're going to the other side." And he says, "I'm taking a nap." The disciples believe that it's their responsibility now to fulfill the command of Jesus. Jesus makes a promise and he says, I guess we got to get to the other side. I guess it's up to us. And they start furiously getting across. And when the storm came, they still believe that it's up to them. And they look at Jesus and say, "Don't you even care? Don't you know we're about to drown?" That's a little bit of how I felt this year. There have been many times throughout the course of my life, and this year has been one of them, where I've looked up at the sky and say, "Seriously? Like, I'm your boy." Like, you know, like, I mean, it sounds funny, but you feel like that a little bit. Like, yo, me and you, I mean, you know, like, we've been doing this thing, you know, like, why? Like, why is it like this right now? I've been praying to you. I'm asking for you, because I look at the disciples and it says frantically they woke him up shouting, "Teacher, don't you even care that we're going to drown?" I look at that and go, I get that. I get that. In fact, that seems like the right thing to do. Isn't it the right thing to do when you're scared and when you're panicking to run to God and to say, "God, I need help here. I'm going down. I'm terrified. I'm scared. Why are you quiet? Like, why does it seem like the world is just turning, even though I am terrified?" Sometimes the silence of God is so disconcerting, because we feel like God needs to be involved in our lives, especially when we call out to him, especially when we pray. Isn't that what all of your leaders have told you? That when you pray, that God's going to show up? But sometimes in our darkest moments, it feels like God isn't showing. I don't know, did your leaders, did your parents, did they lie to you? What is this? Those are sometimes the biggest moments of doubt. Even though it feels like the right thing. Because you feel like, isn't that what they're supposed to do? "Teacher, don't you even care that we're going down?" I don't know if you ever feel like that. Do you ever just kind of feel like you're going down? That nobody is there to grab you? And that if anything's going to happen, you just have to do it yourself. Just feel like you're going down. When he woke up, he rebuked the wind, and he said to the water, "Quiet down." Suddenly the wind stopped, and there was a great calm. And he asked them, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still not have any faith in me?" I don't know if in your Bibles, if there's, you know, I have those little titles above the certain stories. This one is called "Jesus Calms the Storm." I think that's a bad title, because I don't think that's what this passage is about. I don't think this passage is about Jesus calming the storm. Because it says, suddenly the wind stopped, there was a great calm, and he asked them, "Are you so afraid? You still not have any faith in me?" I don't think he was saying to them, "Don't you have any faith in me that I could calm the storm?" He said, "Don't you have any faith in me that I was asleep on a cushion, and that I'm not unaware, that I'm not ignoring you, and that it's not that I don't care. But there's a chance that I might know something that you don't know. And so I'm sleeping. Because what I know is that I told you on the other side of the shore that we're going to get to the other side." That's all you needed to know. All you needed to know is that I said, "Let's get into the boat. We're going to go there. And if I say we're going to go there, we're going to be there. I don't care what storm is coming up. Because I said, we're getting to the other side. Don't you have any faith in me? Haven't we been together long enough that you know that when I say something, I'm going to finish it? I know that you were afraid. But calming the storm is not what Jesus wanted to do. Jesus wanted to get to the other side. In fact, they said this, they were filled with awe and said among themselves, who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? I hear in the disciples' voice that even then they didn't get it. Even then they didn't understand that the proper response wasn't looking at each other and instead of saying, who is this man that the wind and the waves obey, and kind of high-fiving each other, kind of going, wow, that's crazy, that's really cool. And we're all in awe of the calming of the storm, and I've heard this sermon so many times, and usually the theme of the sermon is Jesus wants to calm the storms in your life, or Jesus has the power to calm the storms in your life. I don't think that's the message of the passage. I don't. Because sometimes the storms in your life don't get calm. Sometimes they get worse. And if I look at Jesus, and if that's what I believe about this passage, that the message of this passage is God's going to take the bad things in your life and make them good and calm, my friends, you're going to be disappointed with God. But if the message of this passage is this, that I can trust the promises, that no matter what comes into my life, what storms rage through my life, what pain I have, that there's a few things I can believe. One is, I can believe it's temporary. I believe that Jesus said I'm going to get to the other side. And that means that this storm is not going to last forever and that I'm going to survive this. I can look at him. He's asleep on a cushion. If he's not worried, then maybe I shouldn't be either. I think that's the message there. So one, the storm is temporary. Second is, if I'm willing to go through it, I'm going to end up with what I was promised. As I was telling you about the story of sitting in the chair, I was promised a bluebird. And if I was willing to endure the pain, I was going to get one. These guys were promised a trip to the other side. If they were willing to endure the storm, they were going to get one. They were going to make it to the other side. And the third thing I learned by looking at this passage is, I can trust the one hurting me. I can trust the one that I've entrusted myself to. Because I can see what he's done in people's lives. I can see his handiwork. I know his power. And I know that if he says that I'm going to get to the other side, then I'm going to get to the other side. Why are you so afraid? Do you still not have any faith in me? See, Jesus can calm storms. That means that storms are not going to get out of control. That means that even if I'm terrified, I'm not going to drown. Not when he said, I'm going to see you all the way through. Even though I feel alone, I know that I'm not going to be because Jesus said, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. But I'm going to walk you through some nightmares sometimes. I'm going to walk you through things that would make grown men cry. But you know what? I'm going to walk it with you. And all you have to do is not ask me to take away the pain. Even though sometimes I know you will, and I know you want to, don't ask me to take away the pain. Ask me to walk you through it. And look at what I'm doing in the midst of it. If I'm not panicking, don't panic. If there's not sweat on my upper lip, don't let there be on yours. Calm yourself. I promise I will get you to the other side. End of the story is, I ended up with a tattoo. A nice bluebird. And I've been able to tell the story of my grandfather to many people. My bluebird tattoo turned into something truly beautiful. It turned in the opportunities for me to tell the story of my grandfather, but also gave me the opportunity to give this particular sermon to many people in the last few weeks. And there's been many people that have come up to me in the last few weeks and said, I needed to hear that. Because I'm in pain. And I need to know that I'm getting to the other side. And if I shut down and I said, I don't want to feel any of this stuff, I would never be able to hear the voice of God. And I would never be able to share it with you. So my friends, that's good pain. There's a good pain and there's a bad pain. Bad pain is that pain that we endure that doesn't get us anywhere. It just hurts. Pain of abuse. pain of bad relationships, things that we just need to leave. But there's a good thing. There's that pain that comes as we're following God and things come into our lives that make us better, that make us more human, that make us who we are. So, don't be afraid of good pain, because you'll get to the other side. Let me pray for you. Jesus, thank you for my friends. Thank you for who they are and who they're becoming. Father, I don't wish pain on a single person in this room. But the reality is, if we don't hurt, if we don't suffer, we'll never find who it is that you're designing us to be. We'll never find the life in you that we long for. We'll never find a life, period, that we long for. Father, help us to resist the temptation to stop the pain in our lives, the good pain. Help us to be wise to identify what's good pain and what's bad pain, to let the bad pain go, and to give ourselves to you. Father, we're sitting down in the chair. Start the needle. We're ready to go. Thank you.